97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome into the podcast exclusive version of Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Tony Colombo here in studio with producer Chad Ellis. Bo Matthews is joining us from the Matthews compound in southern Missouri. And on the phone at the Lake of the Ozarks is our buddy Mike Marfell, the professional fisherman. And Mike, it's great to talk with you. Thanks for sticking around and doing a little extra bonus content with us. I want to remind folks that at this week's show, Mike was on with us along with Jesse from Razorback Armory and, of course, Aaron Tarlow from Southern Armory. Got great information from Jesse and Aaron about the state of the gun industry and everything that, you know, surrounding the coronavirus situation. Also, some great information from Mike on the show about how the coronavirus has affected fishing. But we didn't get to talk too much, just actual fishing. So that's what we're going to do right now.
We're going to put a little line with that corona.
Yeah, exactly. Coronavirus is being set aside for the rest of this podcast, and we're just going to talk about fishing. We mentioned on the show that this is a great time to get out on the water. The weather has finally started to cooperate a little bit. We've seen some really nice days. And Mike, you said that it's a great time to be on the water. So tell us about what is happening out there.
Well, like I said, the fish are moving up the spawn. There's still some fish hanging out on the main lake points and secondary points, but the biggest percentage of the fish, I would say, are mid-cove and further back. They're moving in there to spawn. Water's 55 degrees. The bait is just all over the place in the back of these coves, so gulls diving everywhere, birds chirping, trees are budding, squirrels are running, all crazy. So fish are ready to do their thing. I mean, the bite's going to really turn on here in the next, you know, it's the bite's decent right now, but by the weekend, if this sun stays on here, it's going to be game on.
Yeah, everything's coming alive. It's springtime. This is the best time of the year, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you don't have to be hardcore to be out here. It's 74 degrees out here right now.
Right.
Tony, you got a place down there.
Weather.
Tony, you got a place down at the lake. Are you going down there this weekend?
Yeah, we have a family condo down there. I don't think we're going down this weekend, but we will be down there very soon, and I can't wait to get back out on the water because, as you mentioned, Bo, you know, springtime, the days are a little bit longer. It's finally starting to warm up a little bit. I feel like this is the best time of year to fish, like, you know, March or the end of March, early April into May. But I'm not sure that is it. I was just going to ask that. Is this really the best time of the year?
It is a great time to catch fish because they're up where you can catch them. Mm-hmm. And numbers. Just because they're, you know, they're going to feed up heavy before they spawn. So up until the point they're actually on their beds, yeah. And you know, Tony, at Lake of the Ozarks, these fish don't all spawn at the same time. There'll be several waves of them. The first one, I wouldn't say there's any – I haven't seen it. Well, the water's muddy. You couldn't see a bed now anyway. But I don't think there's any beds made or on beds, but they're getting real close. Real close.
That's fantastic.
So, yeah, it's the time of year to come down here and catch. You can catch fish shallow.
Yeah,
I'm talking, you know, most of the fish that we've been catching, I'm talking two or three reel turns off the bank. I'm landing that jerk bait with the tail hook on the bank, and I'll just slowly reel it down two or three times and twitch it once and let it set there, and that's usually where you're getting your bites.
Is it still
some other
guys slow?
Have been catching spinnerbait.
Are they still kind of slow because they haven't warmed up yet? So you don't want to fish anything that's too that it has a rapid retrieve or anything right now. You want to make sure that they get a good look at it, right?
Yeah, right. But in the dirty water, like up in the glaze and the backs of some of these coves, it's a little dirty. You can still get in there and throw a spinnerbait or a crankbait. You just got to retrieve it slow. You just can't be burning it.
Yeah.
You let that spinnerbait go to the bottom and then just slow roll it back to you. Mm-hmm. A wiggle wart rock crawler, that kind of crankbait, a flat-sided crankbait. You just can't rip it back to you. You just got to reel it nice and slow.
Bo, how's your wiggle wart crawler? How's your wiggle wart, Bo? Is it?
If you got it cleared up, they make an ointment for it.
I've never been speechless until today. Tony, you did it. Thanks for asking.
Hey, go ahead.
I'm a live bait guy. I'm a live bait guy. I'm just, you know, catfish.
We gotta get him. He's got to go out with us.
We do got to take Bo out.
I talked about this.
Get some sunscreen for that dome of his, though.
Put a hat on it.
Yeah,
I've talked about this on the radio multiple times, but it really is a moment that I will never forget. About 10 years ago, maybe a little bit more than that, I was over at a buddy's farm at his house. He lives on a farm, and there was a pond there. And I hadn't really fished much since I was a kid or younger with my dad, you know, through my 20s. I was a night DJ on the radio, and so I was working all night and sleeping all day, and I was not getting out. So, you know, the great outdoors was not really a part of my life. And I picked up a fishing pole that he had at his house, and I had never really fished with lures before, with plastics. It's always been, you know, live bait, like Bo just said. And I caught this bass, probably a 2-pound bass, on it was a hula popper, I remember clearly, and it was like something like snapped in me. And I thought,
really?
Yeah, it was like I had never really had any success fishing with, you know, with anything but live bait, you know, worms in a bobber or letting a worm or something sink to the bottom and try to catch catfish. But it was like just this light went off, and I was like, wow, that actually worked, fishing with a lure. And I love the feeling that I just got from catching this fish, and it was game on from there on. Now I have a bass boat, and I fish every chance I get. And I mean, it's, you know, it really did just turn everything.
There's something about tricking them, right? There's something about tricking them with an artificial lure.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and like me, I love to fish a jig, and you can fish it so many different ways. You can swim it, you can crawl it, you can hop it, you know, all that kind of stuff. And now I've gotten into where I buy all my jig heads naked, and then I tie my own skirts.
Yeah.
So it kind of adds one more level of, hey, that's something I put together.
Yeah.
You know?
Now, Tony, you'll remember that I went to the Big River and I fished with Brian Wertle, the Stream Adventures guy.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a great time. We caught a couple of, it wasn't a busy, it was in January, but it was a beautiful day. And I was using a lure, and he was kind of instructing me, because again, I've always done live bait catching since mm-hmm. a kid, you know, since I was a kid growing up in Minnesota.
Sure.
But there is a skill set to it. Now, I will tell you that Brian, as a pro fisherman, was even impressed with my casting abilities.
Hey, all right.
I know, so I'm halfway there. I just need to figure out which lure to put on.
There you go.
I say that all the time when people ask me, Tony, what's the best way to become a better bass fisherman? Hands down, being a really, really, really good caster is the best way. The more presentations you can make, the quieter you can get that bait in the water, all that type of stuff is really super important. So, Bo, you're on your way.
It really is. I mean, you know, there's
Isn't
a lot
of requirement in Minnesota that you fish too. If you live there, they run you out of the state.
No kidding.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But you're
either playing hockey or fishing, right? Yeah. That's kind
of You're so right about casting though, Mike. It really is a completely a difference maker. If you know it, just that basic knowledge of where they are, and you have the ability to land where you think they are, it can change everything. I have been out fishing with people before where we are, you know, fishing out of the same boat using the exact same lure, you know, at the exact same time, and one person is in, you know, almost doing the exact same things, and one person is catching fish and the other one's not, and that's because that person is able to cast, you know, maybe 1 foot more accurately than the other person, sure. And they know exactly where to go. And obviously, there's lots of different levels. There's a whole lot more knowledge to be gained. But I think that is the first basic step of just having that rudimentary knowledge of kind of where they're at. And that can change a day from being a no fish day to a dozen fish day.
Absolutely. And same thing with if you're fishing a crankbait, for example.
Mm-hmm.
The farther you can cast it, the longer it dies down and stays down in that strike zone where you want it. Yeah. You know, because it's going to come down to a certain point and stay there, and then eventually it's going to start coming back up to your rod. So the longer you can make that cast, the more time it's going to spend down there in that strike zone. So every cast, you're getting more of a percentage of that fish, it being presented in front of that fish. And people handicap themselves. My partner here, he's just kind of getting into it when he bought my boat. And listen, he has some inferior equipment still. He's a young guy and he's working on that. But, you know, you don't have to go out and spend a fortune, but it sure helps.
Yeah.
As far as a nice bait caster, and a nice rod, and then learning, like you said, learning how to throw on it. You know, it's a big part of it.
If somebody's going out this weekend or over the next couple of weeks and they're bass fishing, what are your most basic recommendations? What is the right time of day, or multiple times of day to be out there? And what are the lures that you would recommend people using right now?
Right now, it's pretty easy, and it's not much different than the last time we talked, other than the jerkbait's still in play, a spinnerbait, a jig, a flat-sided crankbait, or a wiggle wart, something to get down on the, a wiggle wart basically is imitating a crawfish banging around. Mm-hmm. And with this water warming up, them crawfish are starting to get active.
Nobody wiggles a wart like Bo Matthews, I'm telling you.
No.
What are you talking about? Are you nuts? What the heck?
and
I think you're losing your mind.
Those are probably the main things right now. You can catch them other ways, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But if I were to tell somebody to come down here, right now down in my boat, I got on a crankbait, three jig rods, and three jerkbait rods. Mm-hmm. And I got that Alabama rig firmly placed in the rod locker. Not that you couldn't go out and catch on them, but it's kind of, you know, as this water warms up and these fish move shallow, that's going to kind of die off.
Right.
Until they go back out.
I always think that it's first light and then maybe that last 45 minutes before sunset are the two best times of the day to fish. But I don't know, is that true, or is that just kind of an old wives' tale?
In general, that's true. But this time of year, through the middle of the afternoon can be great, too, because you got that sun's been up, the wind's got a chance to blow and, you know, stir up the banks a little bit. So, yeah, I think this time, I was just telling Ethan here that I wish tournaments this time of year, if we had any, we won't get into that, but would be if they started at 9 a.m. and went till 5 o'clock instead of starting at, you know, the butt crack of dawn. Because it's not necessarily with the water temperatures being cooler, the morning's not like it is once we get to the summertime. You know, that might be your only opportunity in the summertime to get a bite,
right.
Is that first hour and a half of the day, and then again in the evening.
Yeah.
Right before sundown. But right now, no, it's, you know, let's just say it this way. We wanted a late boat draw when we did have a tournament 2 weeks ago, because we knew that afternoon bite was going to be better because the sun had been, you know, they'd been out all day and had a chance for those fish to move shallow. When I told you I found them but couldn't get them to bite, I was seeing them on my electronics hanging out over brush piles that were in 20 foot of water, and they were kind of suspended over the top of them, and I couldn't get them to bite, but I did catch that 5-pounder when it was up shallow. I happened to see some gulls diving, and I went over there and threw in there, and first cast I caught that 5-pounder because the gulls were diving on the bait, and that bass had moved from those brush piles into feed, and I'm sure once he ate, he probably went right back to those brush piles and suspended over the top of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny because when I got bit, I was like, I think I got bit, and I just didn't feel anything. And then I reeled up on it and just swung on it, and sure enough, it was a 5-pounder. And my partner said, he goes, exactly what you were just telling me. He grabbed it, and he was swimming back towards those brush piles. I said, there's a good chance, you know. And I said, the other chance is when a fish grabs a bait like that and moves with it, real good chance there's other fish there because they're getting it, and they're running away from the other fish.
That's fantastic.
You know what I'm saying? They're going to eat and then get away. So
is there a magic number as far as the water temperature is concerned that once it gets above a certain number that they start to become more aggressive and you see, you know, the numbers go up as far as how many fish you're catching? And then also,
right,
is there
right
a magic
now,
number?
55.
Yeah, 55. And then what about like a day of the year? Is there kind of a line that, you know, once it gets to April 1st or, you know, whatever, is there, or is it more based on the weather than it is kind of the time of year?
No, I think it's the length of days. So it's totally has to do with how long the daylight, you know, and with these longer days coming. And like I said, when the trees start to bud and start to turn the leaves, that first full moon that happens after that's usually going to be your first wave of spawners.
Yeah. Well, this is the year. This is the year that we're all going out together. Bo, myself, Chad, Mike, we're all getting together. We're all going fishing.
Can we bring Perry for musical accompaniment?
Oh, you know what? If I go fishing without Perry, he won't speak to me for a week. So he can definitely join us as well.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? Hey, let me serious question. Okay. Yeah. Two schools of thought. When you're in a boat, if you have music playing, does it drive the fish away or does it draw them to you?
It does not drive them away.
Really?
Now, you don't want to play Rammstein at full volume, although...
I never want to do that.
I fished an Elite Series with a Elite Series Pro in a small backwater where he already caught a limit. He sat down, put on sunscreen, talked to me for 25 minutes, tied on a crankbait, and blared Rammstein as loud as that boat would blare it, and he proceeded to cull every fish in his live well.
Wow.
So I'm a firm believer that it does not matter.
It does not matter.
He claimed it because he thought those bass were Nazis, and that's why they were
German music.
The Rammstein.
Buddy, I can't tell you how many times my grandfather would scream at me or my uncles would be screaming at me, turn that radio down.
Like, don't talk. What? I think that was a way. I firmly believe that the whole
kids to shut up.
Don't talk. You'll scare the fish because, I mean, that's for me. That's part of fishing is getting the time to hang out and talk to your buddies while you're out on the water. Like it's when we're out fishing, it's not like we're standing there silent. We're constantly talking, and there's usually is a little bit of music playing in the background, not too loud. But
well, Tony, you've spent enough time down here. These fish have heard it all.
Yeah, no kidding.
There's people on docks.
You got
music
that right.
Going,
you got that
boats
right.
Boats running around, jet skis.
Yeah.
I've caught fish. I had a guy one time in a tournament. I was fishing brush piles in about 20 foot of water in this back middle of this cove. And I had drifted away from him to let him rest and was fishing a different brush pile. And he came in and pulled and anchored one of those big, like 45, 50 foot yachts on it.
Mm.
And my partner was like, man, I can't believe he just did that. I was like, it'll be fine. I said, just we'll wait our half hour or whatever. And I cruised over there on the trolling motor and I said, hey, I'm not asking you to move, but you don't mind if I fish right here, do you? Because you're kind of sitting on a spot. Mm-hmm. That I was fishing, there's some brush. He was like, no, we'll move. I said, no, don't fire up your motor. Don't go anywhere. Stay right there. And we proceeded to catch three keepers basically off the shadow of his boat.
Wow.
And
that's
they,
awesome.
There was people in the water swimming. I mean, they're so used to that stuff down here.
Yep.
Now, when you initially dropped that anchor and the boat pulled in there, they might have scattered off those brush. But
and if you had the right guy, and most of the people on the lakes are like this, a lot of times the people that are swimming are, you know, are anchored like that. If you go up next to them and you know you fish and you know you make it clear that you're not being weird or whatever, you know,
right?
And you do that and you catch a fish, they'll usually give you a standing ovation. People usually love stuff. You know, they like to see that stuff and they'll clap and cheer. And I mean, I've done that many times where I've been within, you know, shouting distance of a group of people either coved out or swimming off a dock, and I'll catch a fish, and then all of a sudden I'll hear like a round of applause, and people are, you know, you didn't even know that they're watching you, and they see the fish,
and then
they're like, oh, hold it up, I want to, you know, I want to see it. Like usually people are very friendly about that type of stuff.
Nine
so do you show them your wiggle worm bait or whatever?
Yeah.
The heck were you talking about?
Wiggle wart.
Is that a wiggle wart?
Wiggle wart. Yeah.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah.
Tony, I had an experience down here one time. There's a mom and her son fishing on it. She wasn't fishing. The boy was kind of just drowning a crappie jig in the dock stall. And she had her feet dangling off the edge in the water. And I said, you don't mind if I catch that fish that lives underneath your feet, do you? And she kind of looked at me funny. And I skipped that jig underneath her swim platform and caught about a 4-pounder out of there. And she was like, oh, my God, I didn't. And that boy was like, I've been fishing all day, haven't caught one. So I took that fish and let it go back in their dock, and then I went over and cut that jig off and handed it to that kid.
People love that. They really do. I mean, that's part of kind of like the lake lifestyle. I one morning I got up at first light. It was probably 5:45 in the morning, and I was fishing just off the dock and off the bank, and I caught a probably, I think I ended up weighing him. I think he was just about 6 pounds. So this is a big fish. And and where I was on a sidewalk. And so I was about 3 feet above water level and couldn't, there was like a rope fence there. And so there was no way for me to get down. So I knew I was going to have to lift this fish out of the water 2 or 3 feet and get him to me. And I didn't have a net. I didn't have anything. And I get hooked up, and I'm fighting this fish, and there's a dad and a son. And the kid couldn't have been more than 5 or 6 years old. And they see that I've hooked up and that I'm in this fight, and they're watching. And I looked up at him, and I said, I think I need a net. And the dad looks at the kid, and he goes, bring him the net. And the kid sprints out of his boat slip, runs down the dock, runs down the sidewalk at full speed, and hands me their net. And I was able to reach down and use it to get it. And the kid was so like he wanted pictures of the fish. He was like, "Can I touch it? Can I the dad was like, "Yeah, great job." And I was like, "Oh, thank you, buddy. Thank you so much." And I still regret that I didn't let him do the net. I just wasn't thinking. I should have let him, like, I should have said, hey, okay, put the net on. Hey,
when you got a 6-pounder on the line, a lot of thinking goes out the window.
Yeah, you're right. I was certain I was going to lose this fish as soon as I lifted him out of the water. Like, I was just certain that he was either going to snap off or whatever, because
yeah,
I had to lift him
6-pounders 3 feet. No,
I had to lift him so much out of the water. I was like, I'm going to lose this freaking fish. So you're right. There was a lot of thinking that went out the window, but that's just it. That's the majority of people down at the lake and on the water everywhere that you go.
Most of the time, if you act like a human, most people will treat you like one.
Absolutely. So. That is Mike Marfell. Make sure you check out all of his fishing on the website 10 Horse Monty on YouTube. 10 Horse Monty, 10 like the metal, not the number, TIN. 10 Horse Monty on YouTube. Mike and his partner, every time they go fishing, they film their on the way to the lake talking about their game plan and how they're going to go about whatever tournament they're fishing in. Then they film while they're fishing, so you get to see them actually in action, hopefully catching fish. And then after the fishing trip, they always talk about what they did right and what they did wrong and pretty much document all that right there on the 10 Horse Monty YouTube channel.
The first one, we were fortunate at Table Rock. I was too stubborn to pick up that dang Alabama rig, and my partner, Austin Ware, the guy I drew, so you know that's a pro-am format, boater, non-boater, and he had 3 nice keepers on an Alabama rig before I got smart enough to pick one up. And at that point, it was late in the day, and I knew I wasn't going to do, even if I caught a fish or two, I wanted to catch a fish for points, but I put him in the position. I totally let him say, hey, go here, go there, take me here, take me there. Try to get him a win.
Yeah.
He ended up getting a check and getting, I think, like 5th place or something like that. I forget what place he got, but he finished fairly high, got a check. And then me and Gabe went out the next day, and I took nothing but an Alabama rig, and we both went out and caught some really nice smallmouth. So,
nice.
You know, that's, I like to do that a lot after tournaments, especially if it's far away, like Bull Shoals, Table Rock. If it's a Saturday tournament, especially, I'll stick around and go fishing on Sunday just to try to see what I did wrong, when it zigged, when I should have zagged, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And people are a lot looser lipped after the tournament too, to be honest, about how they caught them.
Sure.
I'll usually go back to my area that I was fishing and maybe try the same area but with a different technique and see why I missed, you know, the deal. And in that case, I just missed it because I was too stubborn to throw an Alabama rig. And that tournament was strictly Alabama rig. The guy that won it, you know, he was my partner, Gabe, 10 Horse. He drew Pete Winters, a local guide down there, and Pete's fishing with the new technology, the Garmin LiveScope, and he is literally watching his Alabama rig fall to the right depth that he wants and watching it come back and watching the fish follow it and watching the fish bite it on that LiveScope.
Wow.
And he was able to go pick out individual trees that and cast to the tops of these, you know, he might have been in 50 foot of water, the trees come up top out at 15, And that's how he's able to get that Alabama rig to the right depth and not get it hung up, bring it up and over those trees. And actually, Gabe said it was amazing to watch those fish follow that thing, how many times they follow it and don't eat it.
Wow, that's incredible.
So, yeah, and that technology, trust me, that's going to be all over the place in the next few years. That's the next big thing. Side imaging and down imaging was big when that popped, but this live scope, where you're actually projecting out and seeing what's out in front of you, not what's under you, it's going to be a big, big game changer, especially for that type of fishing. Deep water stuff like that at Table Rock, where you're going to count that down to the treetops.
That is Mike Marfell. Make sure you check him out.
Tony.
Yeah, you bet, Mike. Thank you so much for your time. If you missed the show this week, make sure you download the podcast of the Second Amendment Radio and Great Outdoors show. And thank you for downloading this week's podcast exclusive. That's Mike Marfell. Make sure you.
Hey, Tony,
keep up
one more thing. Can I spot one more thing real
Please
quick?
Please do, yes.
I just want to thank my boss. our company, you call me a professional fisherman, which I always give you trouble for because I have a real job, and they've kept us working from home. So
that's great.
It's been nice.
Yeah, that's good.
Me and the wife are working 6 feet apart. We both work at the same engineering firm, and it's like we've already invented an imaginary coworker. Her name's Karen that we can blame things on.
We still blame Chad for
home and keep working. So if I was a true professional fisherman, I'd be struggling to make a living right now. So
by the way, Chad
the
Ellis
one time
is not
I'm glad I got a real job.
right. Mike, thank you.
Put your dishes in the sink. Yeah.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for your time today and dropping all the knowledge on us, and we'll talk to you again real soon, and keep an eye on the 10 Horse Monty YouTube channel. That is 10 Horse Monty on YouTube to watch Mike and Gabe fish and get a bunch of knowledge while you're there as well. Thank you, Mike, and thank you.
Thanks, Tony.
For
I'll
listening.
Send you some pictures from later today. We'll catch a few and send them
Please
to you.
Please do. That'd be awesome. We'll post them. Thank you for listening to the podcast exclusive of Second Amendment Radio and The Great Outdoors. Make sure you're checking out the show every week, Saturdays on 97.1 FM Talk at 3 p.m. and Sundays at 6 p.m. on KMOX. For my partner.
I just figured.
Go ahead.
No, hold on. Yeah. I just figured out something. The reason this is the extended version of the exclusive podcast.
Yeah.
We ain't got nothing else to do.
Right. I know. Yeah. Hey, you can tell Mike's tournament got canceled because he's like, I'll talk to you guys forever because I don't have to be on the water right now. No, this is great stuff. And it's definitely nice to spend some time talking about something besides coronavirus for sure. So thank you guys so much. Bo, thank you. Chad,
thank you.
I'm Tony Colombo. Thank you for listening to the podcast exclusive of Second Amendment Radio and The Great Outdoors. We'll see you next week.
Get more at 971talk.com.